Randall House asked me to do this seminar on this little book that I wrote on A View from Grief's Window. I want to start by just telling you how this book came into being. It was never meant to be a book. The way I process life is I write, and I don't even consider myself a writer. I just write what's happening in my life because, and by the way, by training, I'm a psychologist, which should worry you just a little bit. I know enough now to mess me up the rest of my life. But I always tell my clients, to whatever emotion that you're going through, write about it because it gets it out of your head and onto a piece of paper. And then you can go back and edit it if you need to, but it just helps me process. And so, In 2003, I was at the National in Tampa and got a call that I needed to get home quickly because my dad was dying. I won't go through that whole story. The story is in the book, but I just started writing what I was experiencing through that process of grief. My dad was 94. I made a mistake one time in a church. I was talking about, somehow I was talking about my dad, and I said, you know, he was 94 when he passed away, but when you're 94, you're supposed to. There was a 94-year-old lady in the church that was not happy with me for the rest of her life. It's only a couple more years, but she was not happy with me. But so, and then when my mom died, I just kept writing. And so I came up with these 10 lessons that I learned. They're not very profound. But by the way the book came about was I had a friend that I was on staff with at Truth and Peace who had, I think it was 2 miscarriages in a year. And so I just sent her some things that I'd written about the grief that I went through in losing my parents. And I know it's different, but she happened to be an English teacher. And she said, you need to finish this and get it published. So Randall House was gracious to do that. And I wrote it very short for 2 reasons. One, people going through grief don't want to read 300 pages of some, you know, theological or academic discourse on grief. And most people aren't readers. But I you know what I almost did this morning is just read you the book. You can read it in an hour. But I decided if I do that, you won't go buy any. And they've already sold tens of copies of this. How many of you are readers? How many of you are not? Yeah. But you would sit down and read this because it's short. And I tried to read. Matter of fact, I have another book coming out about the same size. It's A View from Joy's Window, The Antithesis. And Danny, I did use a big word. That's why I have a PhD. It's the opposite of this. It's A View from Joy's Window. But I wrote very narratively. I learn from stories. Don't give me an outline. Just tell me a story, and I'll learn a whole lot more. But anyway. And so this book is about the grief that I experienced with my mom and dad. By the way, mom was almost 99, and dad was almost 94 when they passed away. So they had a very, very good and long life. I talk a lot about my parents. And matter of fact, at the beginning of the book, I include 2 tributes that I wrote about my mom and dad. They live life in the very, I call it they live life in the simple lane. They lived in Slocum Station, Ohio. If you want to know where that's at, you probably won't find it on the map. It's a little crossroads in southern Ohio. I went to a church there in Slocum. I said it was right at the edge of the business district, which meant it was right by the gas station. That's all we got. Well, I thought I would just go down through these 10 things that I've learned and talk about them. We will probably get out early, and I know you don't mind that, unless you have questions. The first thing I notice is that grief's real. It's just real. I probably should define grief for you. Here's my definition of grief. Grief is simply our emotional reaction to loss. By the way, I grieve all kinds of things. If I lose my keys, I grieve until I find them. But we're talking about the grief that we experience in the loss of someone. James said that, what is your life? It's just a vapor. But grief's real. I realized that when I flew from Tampa and got to the hospital and got to spend the night with my dad before he passed away. But in that hospital room, when he took his last breath, all of a sudden, the landscape became very real. It was a landscape that I'd never been to. And by the way, I've said by the way about 150 times, and I'll probably say it 150 more times. We're all going to pass through that. At some point, we don't get out of this world alive. Unless you're a new Enoch. You're going to get there one day. And it's real. The second observation I made is it's very incongruent. And what I mean by that is, let me use the illustration. I have some very, very dear friends. Some of the best friends I've ever had in the world were Tom and Patty McCullough. Tom McCullough was probably the most godly man I've ever been around. He was, Patty died in her 50s, Tom was in his 60s, both died of cancer. I spoke at both of their funerals, and one of the things I say, and this is what I mean by sometimes grief is incongruent, is that I think sometimes we get the feeling that we have to choose. Like, I am happy that Tom wasn't suffering anymore. I really am, because he had pancreatic cancer, went through horrible pain. Patty was sick for many years, and I am so glad. But on the other hand, I miss him like crazy. My heart breaks every time I want to pick up the phone and call Uncle Tom, or Tom. But I can't. So, and sometimes I feel like think we have to choose. I say you don't have to choose. You do whichever one you need at that moment. I will tell you, it's just a few months ago, I woke up in the middle of the night and started crying because I missed my dad. And he'd been dead for several years. I just missed him. And so, but there's a part of me that says he's not all bent over anymore. He's with Jesus. I love that fact. Matter of fact, I was just at Pastor Rob Morgan's 70th birthday party, and he talked about Katrina, his wife, and he said, oh, I wish she wasn't in heaven. We go, don't say it that way. No, he said, no, I'm glad she's in heaven, but I wish she was here. And so I think we feel that incongruence. Oh, I probably shouldn't mention that this is not a book on how to grieve, because there's not a formula. It is just simply some things that you might experience and somehow try to normalize that. I say this, the third observation is grief always takes us by surprise, even when we're expecting it. Even when we're expecting it. I went to stay at the hospital with my dad. I was worn out. As some of you know, I do Truth and Peace, so I've been away from home for the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks counting the national. I was worn out. Got there, but I told my family, let me spend the night with Dad. I want to spend one more night. I want to spend the night with Dad. You know, it's one of those things that I thought I could rest, but he needed something like every 5 minutes. Just move him a half an inch and make him feel better. The next morning, I told my brother, who came in to relieve me, I said, Dad's not going to get out of the hospital. He said, yeah, I know. But you see, before that day was over, he was gone. And I was expecting to get to spend one more night with him. And so even that, when I knew he wasn't going to get out of the hospital, I was still surprised. And it always takes us by surprise. even when we expect it, because we think we have another day or another few minutes. Fourth thing, I think it really highlights what really matters. I remember standing at mom and dad, or at, especially at dad's coffin, and I told my wife, all I ever wanted him was for him to be proud of me. That's all. Because that's all that mattered to me at that moment. It didn't matter if he gave me something or fed me. All that mattered to me at that moment was that he was proud. I think about Mary and Joseph. Remember when they lost Jesus? Mm-hmm. I would have liked to have heard that conversation, wouldn't you? I thought he was with you. You said you were I would have loved it. Anyway. But when they go to the temple and he's standing there preaching as a little boy or teaching, don't you know they were proud? Because that's what mattered to them. What matters is that we have a relationship. By the way, if you don't, you won't grieve. You know why we grieve? Because we loved them. We cared about them. If we didn't, does it matter? I was talking to my brother. I don't mean to be trite, but my dad told my brother, he said, all he ever wanted was, as a little boy, was a little squirrel dog. So when dad passed away, he got a little squirrel dog in honor of dad, and got run over by a car. And I said, I'm so sorry. He goes, yeah, I said, doggone. You know why? He said, Neil, it's a dog. Now, don't tell my wife that, because she has a whole different view of dogs. But to my brother, it was a dog. He didn't have the same kind of relationship, so you don't grieve that way. Now, some of you, my guess is over half of you, if you lose a dog, I've gone through it, I think, I don't know how many times with my wife. Every time a pet dies, there is major grief in the house. And it's okay. It's loss. It's okay. How many of you work with children? They grieve the loss of a pet, right? I always take it very seriously. Even the loss of, if you've heard me speak, you may have heard this, but even the loss of a relationship, people grieve. When I was in Africa as a dorm parent, I dealt a lot with middle school love relationships. And somebody said, how do you do that? That would drive me nuts. I go, it's very simple. You just have to remember puppy love, still love to the puppy. And they don't have the emotional fortitude to deal with it. As adults, we don't deal with it very well. How do we expect them? So I took it very seriously. Because why? They were grieving this loss that guy didn't look at them at lunch. Now, that may be a trite grief, but still, what matters in life is what it means to really live. Can I ask you a question? How long have you lived? I don't mean how long have you been alive. How long have you really lived? Because that's what matters in life. Those moments in life that all of a sudden you feel like, I'm alive. Most of us just go from point A to point B and never notice anything. The last time, I think it was the time when Sherwood and I, the last time I was in Africa, Sherwood was with us. And we took some students out of the village of, or it's actually a town now, of Dordopo, out to where there was no electricity, and we told the students, look up. And if you've ever seen a sky where there's no electric around, you can actually see the Milky Way. And I will tell you, I will guarantee you, at that moment, those students were alive. One of them just started crying. She said, I had no idea. You see, that's what matters in life, is to be alive. Fifth thing. The view is different for everybody. That is, grief is different for everyone. Not everyone grieves the same way. And I will say this. I don't think there's a time frame on grief. Some people will say, well, they should have been over it by now. No. No. I'm sorry. No. I told you, I woke up just a few months ago crying because my dad was gone. And that was 2003. I can't do math. Danny, how long is that? 19 years? No. Help me. Something like that. I keep looking at Danny. Danny and I grew up together, and we're first cousins once removed. Whatever that means. But we all grieve. You know, some people grieve very internally. They're just quiet. Some grieve very externally. Go to the Lobies, right, Sherwood? It would scare the pajibis out of you when they start grieving. I don't know what pajibis are, but I've had them scared out of me. It is this very demonstrative expression of grief. Some people do that. We had a family in our church that lost a teenage daughter. And mom grieved very openly. I mean, not mom, but dad grieved very, very openly. Mom was very quiet. And you grieve differently. And it may not, I always tell people, it may hit you at some time when you least expect it. You'll bite into something. And you go, oh, this is just the way they liked it. Or you'll smell a smell. Or you'll see a sight and you go, oh gosh. And all of a sudden, this grief comes flooding over you. I say, just pull the car over and cry. It's okay. Step away and weep. It's actually okay. The sixth thing, I think grief presents us with a very new and different perspective on life. It changes our worldview. Or brings clarity to our worldview. You know, worldview, you can read all kinds of things, but ask these questions: where did we come from, why are we here, and where are we going? When you are in the middle of grief, you ask those questions, especially, why am I here? I was just telling Jonathan, I had a lady just contact me a couple weeks ago. She goes, Neil, I am wrestling. Why did God allow me to be born here in America, to a wonderful Christian family, when I see everything else around me falling apart? I don't understand that. I go, I don't either, except we should thank God. I think about my parents' worldview, which was very different than mine. They lived through World War I, World War II, and the Depression. They looked at life very differently than I did. Matter of fact, when my dad asked me, he said, so tell me what it is that you do. I said, well, I try to help people with their problems. He said, why would you do that? He said, don't you have enough of your own? Yeah, but it made no sense to him. Because, excuse my terminology, but you suck it up and go on. When you've lived through that, you just deal with it. It presents a different worldview. And by the way, I've been working with teenagers for a long time. They are not very resilient today. And I can explain a lot of that. It's one of the reasons why we need to have unity and togetherness. Because listen to me, you wouldn't be in this session if you weren't hurting at some level. If you hadn't lost somebody, because we all have. And we need each other. By the way, there are no words to make it better. I wish I had words that would make it better, don't you? But there's just not any. The research would certainly suggest the thing that matters is that you're there and people feel like you're there. I remember when, you can tell I came from the mission world, but when Aunt Patty died, I was at the funeral home there in Michigan, and Tom came up. He's 50-some years old and crawled up in my lap. He just needed me to touch him. Well, the seventh thing is once you look through grief's window, you'll never be the same. And it's important, I think it's so important to tell the stories. It's one of the reasons why I write. And I'm not a writer. I write about my mom and dad because I don't want the stories to die. And it's in the process of telling those stories that sometimes helps soothe the grief. It never makes it go away because it still hurts. I remember having a client once who was in a very abusive relationship. His dad, you know, beat him all the time. And I said, "So how is that with you?" He said, "I'm used to it." I go, "You know something? I've had thousands of shots. They still hurt, every one of them. It still hurts. I always wonder, if Andrew and Peter, when they sat around, just told stories about Jesus. Sometimes I can't wait to get to heaven just so we can sit down with them and talk about what it was like. Somebody said, "They won't have time for that. We have eternity." Somebody just asked me the other day, "Do you think Jesus will have time to talk to us?" I go, "Well, time won't ever end, so I suppose he will." Well, purity strikes again. But tell the stories. Tell the stories. Write the stories. Oh, another reason why I write, I'm talking a lot about writing, but how many of you know very much about your great-grandparents? I guess. You know some? I have no idea. I don't even know anything. I know very little about my grandparents. One of the reasons I write and tell the stories is two or three generations, they won't have an idea about me unless they read it. They have gone through some papers and, "Oh, Papa was kind of a goofy guy, wasn't he? Looked like Jeff Foxworthy or Sam Elliott or the Lorax." I speak for the trees. The eighth thing is grief is a painful process. It hurts. Chet Atkins, who is not a very good singer, is an incredible guitar player, or was. He has this song. You can find it on YouTube. I encourage you to watch it, where he actually sings. And the song he sings is about his dad. And the line is, "I still can't say goodbye. It's hard to say goodbye. It hurts. It's painful. It's not an acute pain, but it's a dull ache that will happen for a very long time." When we were in language school, we lived with a French family. We lived in an apartment above their house. He was apiarist. He was a beekeeper. And one night, after I learned enough French to understand what he was saying, he said, "I need your help tonight." I said, "Okay, what?" He said, "I need to move a beehive." I said, "Mark, I'm pretty scared of bees." He said, "Well, we'll wait till the evening when they're all in and we'll put a board over the door and then we can move it." I go, "Okay." All of them were in, but one. And he won't be very happy. Fortunately, it stung Mark, not me. Can I tell you something? For many years, my dad was not a believer. And I kept waiting for death sting. But then he became a believer. And then I could say, oh, death, where is your sting? It takes on a different perspective. I'll talk more about that in just a minute. Let me talk about one that I have no concept of, and there's some folks here today that I know have gone through this. It's what I call the darkest view. Mom and Dad were 90s, in their 90s. I expected them to die. But I don't expect babies to. Don't expect teenagers to. I don't expect people in their 30s and 40s to. And I really can't talk much about it because I've never experienced that. I've experienced it with some very dear friends. Helped them. Even miscarriages, I call it the hidden grief. For years, people didn't talk about it. They do now. I'm very thankful. If you have people in your congregation who have gone through miscarriages, I will tell you, it's just like losing another loved one. So I don't know a lot about that other than what I've walked through with people. It's a dark view. I remember standing in line when this teenage girl at our church, and I asked another psychologist friend of mine, I go, how do you explain that? He said, there's not. He said, it's not supposed to happen this way. But it does. Remember one of our missionaries in Africa, the children out there died much more than they would here. Would, is that not true, Sherwood? And I remember this missionary say, you know, it was another African child that died. He said it didn't bother him a whole lot because it was another one down the line. Until he got to thinking, what if it had been my child? He said, it changed the way I looked at them. I remember in our dorm where we worked in Africa, a guy come in one morning. I think I wrote about this in the book, but, and he said, Pastor, he said, I need to leave early today. I said, Kitty B, what's wrong? He said, well, our baby died last night and I have to go in town and make arrangements. I said, I'm so, so sorry. And he said, well, it's better that they die young like this because it's cheaper to bury them. I was livid. I was livid. I said, how in the world can you say that? How can you say that? And he said, Pastor, I don't know what it's like in America, but here death is part of life. Sure, I'm sad. I'm grieving. But I also have 7 kids in my house that I have to feed. And I have to go back to work. It changed the way I thought about some things. By the way, he lost 3 children that year, mostly to malaria, but then his wife had triplets. So God was gracious. The 10th thing I would say is that we don't grieve like other people. Do we? We've got hope. If you're a follower of Christ, it's not the end. It really isn't. I am not denying the pain and the grief because I've experienced it. But it's not the end. I remember a guy saying to me at this teenager's funeral, he said, God's going to have some explaining to do when I get up there. I go, listen to me. When you get up there, you won't even have questions anymore. Amen. You will be together. And I don't know what it's like in heaven. I really don't. I don't know. You know, you can take your view whether we'll know each other. I kind of hope we do. I think we will. There's some people I want to talk to. How many of you saw the Alistair Begg thing about the man on the middle cross? Oh, go on YouTube, look up Alistair Begg, the man on the middle. I would tell you a story because I think it illustrates what I'm trying to talk about. So he said, just think about the thief on the cross. He said he gets to heaven And the angel says, how'd you get here? He said, I don't know. I don't know. He said, well, at one moment, you're cursing this guy. And the next moment, you're here. How do you? He goes, I don't know. So the angel goes to get the supervisor angel. And he says, so, on what basis are you here? I don't know. He said, well, are you clear on the doctrine of salvation? I have no idea what you're talking about. Are you clear on what the Bible says? I'm paraphrasing. I have no idea. Then on what basis are you here? He said, I don't know. The guy on the middle cross said I could come. That's all I know. And when we get there, that's all that matters. That's all that matters. And we get to live life with Him. Grief is hard. But allow yourself to grieve. If I could say anything, just allow your... I have an aunt. Well, let me say that there is a disorder in psychology, or a mental disorder called dysthymia. I think it's the most underdiagnosed condition. And what dysthymia is, what I call the perpetual blues. It is this, you know, if you're depressed, it's way down here. But dysthymia is, you know, I'm just kind of bummed out. You have to have it for at least 2 years for it to be diagnosed. I think most of it is a result of unresolved grief. Yes, sure. That they just never came to terms. My Aunt Corby, Danny knows my Aunt Corby. Our Uncle Bud died. Uncle Bud was in his 50s. He was every child's favorite uncle. He would be at our house before we got up on Christmas morning so he could play with our toys. But when he died, Aunt Corby never grieved, at least in any way that we could see. But I never noticed her being very happy the rest of her life. Not that she was, you know, she still functioned, she still did her, but there was just this low grade. So grief, and however you need to do that, and for however long you need to do that. For some, it may be a lifetime. And it's hard. For some, it's like my brother losing his dog. But again, be thankful that you grieve because it meant that person meant something to you. Well, questions, comments, criticisms, declarations of heresy? Yeah.
Who do you think you are? No, I'm just kidding.
Nobody.
What do you, in terms of a person who has suffered real loss, and seems to refuse to grieve. Mm-hmm. I worry about people like that, and I don't know how to help. You know, I encourage them, and I want to give them permission. And
yeah, one of the things I will say to them, and it's one of the things I've said, is you sit down with them and say, "Hey, tell me the stories. Tell me the stories about them. I don't know them all that well. I want you to tell me everything." And in that process, all of a sudden, as they're telling the stories, then all of a sudden, I think what is deep inside all of a sudden comes bubbling up. So just tell me the stories. And maybe it will help bring some resolution to that. And or tell them to write the stories. Write the story about them so I can read it. Yeah. Others? Please, I'm not an expert on grief, but yeah. 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 When I'm training counselors as a professor, I always say I say this to parents and I say it to couples, there's one word you can never use, and that's why. Why did you? Because as soon as you say that, they go on the defensive. So they say, so what do I say? I say, just tell me your cognitive process. Yeah. Yeah, like they're going to say that. Now I say, help me understand. Help me understand where you are with this loss. Just help me understand. Or can you describe it for me? Describe what's inside of you. And let me walk with you. Because again, you know, people often ask me, so what do you say at the funeral home? I said, well, there are no words. They're simply not. There was no words that make me feel better, except here's the ones that made me feel better. It may not make you. Can I tell you what your dad meant to me? Can I tell you what this person did for me? I was at a church speaking for the weekend, and one of the members of the church said, Neil, will you come up here a minute? And he stood on the platform and had me stand below and put his hands on my shoulders. And he said, Neil doesn't know this. He said, we lost our daughter in a car wreck in the dips. And he said, Neil's dad didn't really know us all that well. But he said, every year since my daughter left, your dad provided Christmas for us. He sent us $500 every year to buy Christmas. He said, I had zero idea. But him telling me that story made me say, my dad did something that mattered in people's lives. And it made me, it relieved, I don't know if this makes sense, but it relieved some of that grief that I was feeling. That all of a sudden, my dad, who lived this very simple life, had a very profound effect on people's lives and never told anybody. I actually had another family tell me, you know, my dad told us you would never have Christmas had it not been for a quarry. I didn't know that. But all of a sudden now, even though Dad's gone, man, it made me feel better about what he's done. I don't know if that makes sense, but it does to me.
Yes.
And heaven forbid that I make sense. I'm a psychologist, for crying out loud. Somebody else. We just have a few more minutes. Yeah.
Sometimes it's when you ask the question, you know, tell me where, it's hard to tell where you are.
Yeah, oh, it is.
It takes a lot of time. When you ask that question, you need to be able to sit a while, because it may take a while. Because sometimes somebody will ask me about my daughter, and it takes a while.
It takes a while. And there's some places, how do I put it? The lady who lost her teenage daughter, she said to me, Neil, there's some places that people want to go with me that they can't. I have to go there by myself. And so they can't talk about it. And it does take it. If you're dealing with people, it takes time. And if you don't want to spend time with people, you're not going to help them. It just takes time. And to let them process, but you can encourage that. So you told me this, help me understand a little more. And the more they talk, the more that they think that you really, really care. And trust me, people know if you care. They can read through you like a book. They know if you care. And when you care, by the way, if you really care, you won't have trouble finding people who want to talk to you. Because everybody needs to. I was just in Ireland a few years ago, and I was sitting with, they'd asked me to come pastor this church. I go, well, one, I'd have to get ordained. And two, there'd probably have to be a death in my family, because I don't think my wife wants to move to Northern Ireland. But they had had, their pastor's son had, 17 years old, had committed suicide. But they had never processed it. So I'm sitting in this church talking to these parishioners, and just, I said, so tell me about this guy. And the more they talked, the more they could let go of some of that grief. The church struggled for years because the church as a whole had never done that. And by the way, sometimes I think we have to do it as individuals, but sometimes we have to do it as a group, as a whole church. Especially if you're from a small church, or if you're in a large church or small group, let's process this together. And if I can quote Eddie Moody, we are better together. Are we not?
Amen.
It's why you come here.
That's
It's why you come to this place. Sometimes it's just being with people that helps me grieve what I've gone through. Anyway, others? Well, thank you for listening to my rambling. Buy a whole case of these.
Are they 23% off?
I don't need, trust me, I wouldn't pay what they charge for these. Just a funny story. You know, I can get them as a discount, and then when I go places to speak, I can sell them. I have given away more than my royalty checks have been. So I've lost money writing this book, so help me out. No, I'm just kidding. Thank you all, and God bless.